Peter King here, reminding you to subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Peter King, as well as the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer and the 10 Things MMQB podcast.
Hey, it's Gary Gramling. I'm here with my co-host, Andy Benoit. Week one of the NFL season is in the books, and it was absolutely unbelievable. We had Garoppolo, we had AJ Green and Andy Dalton together again, we had Fitz with touchdown number 100, we had the injuries, we had the drama, we had the heartbreak, Del Rio going for two. We're going to break it all down right now on the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello, everybody who just enjoyed an incredible Sunday of NFL football. You have found the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. I am here with my co-host, Andy Benoit. Now, some of you might already know us. We are your old pals from the MMQB podcast. We've just been ever so slightly rebranded. We are now the MMQB 10 Things podcast. You'll be able to catch us early every Monday morning throughout the season. We're going to be talking everything that happened on NFL Sunday, news, analysis, and if Andy allows it, we're going to have some fun.
Well, we don't want to just commit to fun. We have a job we have to get done first, and if there's time left over towards the end of this show, maybe we'll be a little bit entertaining.
All right. Well, I'm going to dance a jig throughout the show to sort of get my fun levels up. But let's jump right into this thing. As you might know by the name, 10 Things refers to Peter King's famous 10 Things I Think in his column. We both work for Peter, and we are just going to steal his idea. We're going to run down the biggest news in the league to start. And just a hint, we're going to do more than 10 topics over the course of this show.
Just like Peter does.
Exactly. His 10 things are 50 things.
Yeah.
We won't have 50,
easily,
but we'll have quite a few. So, Andy, we're going out to Arizona to start. Jimmy Garoppolo. I still can't believe the Patriots won this game. I actually wrote it in my column this morning. I thought Belichick was going Greg Popovich style and just sort of to stick it to the league. He was like, you know what, Gronkowski, Solder, you guys stay home. We're just going to take the B team out to Arizona. We're going to punt on this one. We'll just give it away. Rest our guys. You know, they have three very winnable games at home coming up after this. And you figure they had a real good chance to go 3-1, 2-2, and then that guy who might have thought about deflating footballs comes back into their lineup.
Please tell me, for the sake of any new listeners we have with the regular season starting, you are saying this Popovich thing facetiously.
No.
What? That can't be the note we start on. You're basically saying they weren't going to play their guys to win the game?
No, I'm saying they were taking the long-term look and thinking, what's our best chance to go 3-1 during this non-Brady span of the season? So they're
Gary, come on. It's week one. What are they resting guys in week one?
No, they're resting guys for the upcoming games. You're going to throw Gronkowski out there with a bad hammy and risk aggravating it, and then he misses the winnable games? I think they went into this. I think Belichick looked at the schedule and said, this is the game we have the lowest chance of winning, and we have a very good chance of winning the other three while Brady is out.
There's no way Bill Belichick thought about it that way. That can't be possible.
Well, you're the one who was talking to Belichick a couple weeks ago, so maybe you know better than me. But
actually told me we're going to play to win week one.
Oh, what else?
No,
is he
didn't.
Say?
We didn't talk about it. I didn't even have to ask him about that. Look, here's what I thought was interesting from the game, and tell me if you agree, because Jimmy Garoppolo clearly has a different skill set than Tom Brady.
Yeah,
different style of players. The thing that stands out most is the movement. I know NBC made a big thing about their throwing motion similar. I think a lot of throwing motions look similar in a split screen format. I don't think that's where it's a similar. I mean, I get it, but the big thing to me is that Garoppolo moves well. Brady does not. New England did not tailor their system at all to accommodate Garoppolo in that sense. They put him on the move early on, I think maybe in his first throw of the game, which he was high on, and then the rest of the game it looked like the Patriots. And I think that's the smart thing to do, and my guess is the reason why they had such a weird training camp where they had to split reps, but how do you split them when one guy has never played, he's going to be there four games, mm-hmm. the other guy, you have to have him ready in some fashion. I don't think there was time to adjust the offense at all for Garoppolo. I think they had to be who they were, and it works for them, and it worked for them Sunday night, even with Gronkowski out and Martellus Bennett filling that role.
Yeah. Well, you know, Garoppolo also had a couple of those sandlot type of plays where he extended the, extended the down and got the ball out. He had that deep throw in the fourth quarter there to, who was that? Was that Edelman or was that Amendola?
I think that was Amendola.
Was it
yeah,
Hogan?
That was late
or was
in
it
the
Welker?
Down.
They're all the same guy. They make him in a factory up in Braintree or something and just churn him out. But unbelievable performance by Garoppolo. Obviously spoils Larry Fitzgerald's just incredible game, incredible night, 100th touchdown. And all right, I'm going to ask you something, Andy, because I know how much you love special teams. On that last field goal on the miss, bad snap, bad hold, or bad kick? Or it can be more than one.
Yeah, well, I think a good special teams coach would tell you it was, to a certain degree, all of that. Those things go hand in hand. Obviously, it was a bad kick. The snap wasn't where it needed to be, and the hold was rushed and had to be accommodating for the snap. So it was just a bad field goal exchange scenario there.
There you go. That's good analysis. I know you hate special teams.
Yeah,
so that
I always feel like I'm half-assing these special teams analysis, Gary.
I'm just glad I got
you,
some
you know
special
one other
teams
thing?
Talk out of you.
Yeah, I know. I played along there. It's regular season now. We'll do it. But one other thing that was interesting, Arizona did not blitz at all hardly this game. The one time they did bring pressure, Garoppolo converted a third down against them. It was a man coverage. They beat man coverage one-on-one. Arizona was very basic, and I wonder if that's either they wanted to make Garoppolo process more bodies in coverage, or what I think it is, I think the Cardinals have a real big issue at their number two corner spot, and Justin Bethel
Absolutely.
Was not out there for this game. Yeah, even if Bethel's healthy, they have an issue at that corner spot. Brandon Williams, third-round rookie, does not look at all ready to be on the field. And if you don't trust a perimeter defender, it's very difficult to be any kind of a pressure defense at all.
Well, we talked about it during draft season. Brandon Williams was playing running back, what, two seasons ago down at A&M? I mean, he is brand new to this. So, you know, they sort of have reason to not trust him. He's probably going to be a good one long-term, but, you know, he's got some work to do here.
The other problem is when he has work to do, now you can't move him around because he's not comfortable enough as it is, which means you're not moving Patrick Peterson around. So you also lose your number one corner to a certain degree. Peterson played left corner all night long. He played extremely well, but he did not shadow Edelman in scenarios where he normally would have.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to topic number two. Another guy who made his first start didn't go quite as well, Dak Prescott down in Dallas. Cowboys fall to the Giants really after some, I'm not going to call them early fireworks, but some early competence on offense. Really just nothing going for the Cowboys after that. What did you see from Prescott? Because I know, you know, I'm familiar with him from his Mississippi State days. I know you didn't really see, well, you don't watch college football, so he was probably brand new to you, Andy.
Yeah, he was totally brand new. And I don't watch preseason either because I think you get a false picture. And Dak Prescott's a little bit of an example from that because I am somewhat familiar with some of his highlight plays, the X's and O's of the highlight plays from his preseason. He didn't, in the preseason when he was good, he was manipulating safeties. We didn't see that, or at least we did not see completions off of that with him reading and reacting and at times manipulating safeties. Against the Giants, the passing game was so much more limited and controlled. Dez Bryant was attracting help coverage over the top and was really not a factor as a targeted receiver. Everything was underneath. And Dallas, to their credit, they did a lot of first down passes, and they did a lot of short moving pocket play action where they had Prescott move 3-4 feet to his left, to his right. They moved the line with him. And those are ways to make the field get cut in half to simplify your reads. It's a way to help your quarterback. And when the protection held up extremely well those first two drives, Dak Prescott looked outstanding. They ran 15 plays on each of those first two drives. Problem is you're not going to get perfect pass protection over the course of almost any NFL game. And Dallas, you're built to run the ball. And Ezekiel Elliott, I believe, had barely 50 yards on 21 rushing attempts.
Yeah. Now, I'll just say this about Dak. Yeah, and I did watch him in the preseason, and he did look much better than he ever did at Mississippi State, at least as a passer. He was more of a dual threat guy. But yeah, the Dak who was out there for most of yesterday looked a lot like the Dak Prescott of Mississippi State. Very erratic passer. And, you know, I guess we'll always have August 2016 when Dak Prescott was the next great quarterback.
I didn't feel like he was 2 of 10, by the way, on passes 15 yards or more from the line of scrimmage in this game. And the ball placement was just not there. Obviously 2 of 10, but it was a ball placement issue. I didn't feel like watching the game, though, that it was totally inept. Like the Cowboys were completely hamstrung by their quarterback the way I felt they were last season when I watched them. So there's some encouraging signs here, but they got beat at home against a pretty average NFL defense too. So there's also a lot to work on.
I mean, I don't want to be pessimistic, but the bar was awfully low when it came to the Kellen Moore days and the Brandon Whedon days of the 2015 Dallas Cowboys. So I don't know. I'll hold out hope for Dak long term, but short term, you figure he's going out there. Giants don't know what to expect. I thought they'd move the ball a little bit better. And the sense I had in the fourth quarter was that they were just not going to threaten to score down the stretch. Well, let's move on to topic number 3. A little bit of a happier topic here. Well, unless you're a New York fan of the other New York team. Andy Dalton to A.J. Green was back. Those two were fantastic yesterday in a... I think it was the most exciting game. Oh no, Patriots were the most exciting game, but I'll call this the most exciting game of the day because these are two teams, certainly playoff contenders, certainly the Jets with the Brady situation probably had visions of an AFC East title in their heads, and you know these guys went back and forth. In the end, I don't even really want to put it on Revis because I think Dalton just made a couple unbelievable throws to Green, who really made a couple of unbelievable catches. But the two of them were fantastic. Green finished 12 catches, 180 yards, added a touch. Bengals get the late field goal to win it 23-22, and the Jets can, I don't know, be upset at their special teams since they blew a 22-yard field goal.
That touchdown is a great illustration of how Cincinnati wants to play this year, too. It was a base personnel, if I recall, and they were near midfield, and it was a shot play. It was a deep shot to the end zone. When Cincinnati gets near midfield, and all teams do this, Cincinnati, I think, does it schematically. They might do it the best in the NFL, though, because they have A.J. Green, that helps. But when they get near midfield, they'll line up in a running formation. Almost always they'll use play action because you're out of a running formation, and that's when they take their shot at the end zone on first down. You have to be on super high alert for A.J. Green when you do that. I thought they'd put Green in the slot to do it because Revis would not travel with Green in the slot, just at least based on how Revis was used last season. Mm-hmm. Green was outside on that throw, but the general point is anytime you're watching a Bengals game, when they get near midfield and they're in a running formation, that's where A.J. Green's at his most dangerous.
Well, look, I think karma owes something to the Bengals after the way they went out last year. All that hope going into December, Dalton goes down, and you know we don't have to sit here and recap the meltdown against the Steelers in the playoffs, but I think good things are on the horizon for the Bengals this year. Moving on, we have topic 4. Seahawks get the win today, but do not look good. This was kind of reminiscent of their first two games last year where the offensive line was just brutal. And, you know, part of me is wondering, okay, you know, Russell Wilson just harassed all day. The Dolphins were supposed to do this to teams last year when they added Sue. You know, they have Mario Williams now who, you know, didn't do much in Buffalo last year, but maybe a little rejuvenated with his new team. So I don't know how much of this is Miami might end up just being pretty good on the defensive line, but the Seahawks could not block. Wilson tweaked his ankle. He threw one of the just nastiest interceptions I've ever seen a quarterback throw. He sort of turned around twice as he was dropping back and then just kind of flung it downfield into, you know, just a sea of white jerseys that got picked off. But I don't know. I was pretty confident about the Seahawks coming into the year, and I'm not going to jump off the bandwagon now, but I think they got some problems here, Andy, on the O-line, and I'm not sure, you know, now that teams have had an offseason to prepare for what they're going to do with this new spread, timing-based passing offense. I don't know. I'm not sure they can put up the kind of points they were in the second half of last year.
Well, let me argue the other side just for the sake of discussion then.
There you go.
Russell Wilson doesn't, if there's any QB in the league, and I don't necessarily believe this, but let's have a football discussion.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any QB in the league physically equipped to overcome a bad offensive line, you could say it's Russell Wilson with the way he runs around. And that's the kind of thing, what's unique about that, you're not going to be a consistent offense that way. But let's say you do have a bad offensive line. Well, being inconsistent is better than the alternative for you, which is to be a bad offense. Inconsistent means good and bad. Mm-hmm. Russell Wilson can give you that. They call that, I guess, an X factor. But that's also very difficult to simulate and practice, at least the way Russell Wilson does it. I guess you can run a scout team cornerback out there and call him the quarterback for practice purposes. But the point is, NFL players haven't seen the Russell Wilson style. If their offensive line plays the way it did on Sunday, there are going to be weeks where it's going to go like this, and they're going to have very few points, and they have to rely on the defense. And by the way, they still won this game because of that defense, and a game that they played very poorly. And so it's good to it's one thing to win good games or win games when you play poorly, but there will also be games where they're going to score 30 points playing this style. And Russell Wilson does trail back and spin around two times, like you said, and heave the ball up. There will be times that's going to be Jimmy Graham on the other end, and then he's magical. Then he's got the Sandlot, it factor, all that type of stuff. So I would be a little reluctant just to overreact. I haven't seen the film on this one, of course, yet, but I would be reluctant to overreact. Sometimes games also just take on a certain personality, and every once in a while the personality is just an ugly one, and both teams have a fist fight for 60 minutes.
Yeah, 3 sacks, 9 QB hits. I guess the thing that really bothered me about it is Wilson got hurt in this one. I mean, he was limited after tweaking his ankle, and you know, it's kind of like you're playing with fire behind that offensive line.
Yeah, and well, and that's a great point, Gary, because the other thing that last year, and I wonder how much of this factored into the Seahawks committing and Russell Wilson committing to, as you alluded to, that spread quick strike passing game that they didn't get going today, is that Russell Wilson did not do as good a job of protecting himself as a runaround guy last season. As his rookie year, I was at NFL Films once in the offseason. I went through and watched every play that he ran or scrambled. I actually watched it with Casey Keeler, who was the Delaware coach for a lot of years.
Yeah.
And the number, you want to know, guess how many times Russell Wilson took a hit on in his rookie season running around on any runs?
On any runs, I don't know, what's a lot? 17.
Yeah, as a rookie, he took 0 hits.
What?
He ran out of bounds or slid on every runaround play that we evaluated.
That's the anti-Thomas Rawls.
Well, yeah, it is, and that's what you want your quarterback to be. It's the anti-Robert Griffin. It's the anti-Michael Vick. It's all these. That's what has always made Russell Wilson different than all these other mobile guys, is he has an innate sense for protecting himself. The problem is that did not show up last year, and he took way too many hits. And now he's taking hits again. And there are going to be hits if you're an NFL quarterback where you're going to get hit in the pocket, and it's beyond your control. You're going to get hit sometimes just playing the game. So if Russell Wilson stops protecting himself as a runner, he is going to get beat around way too much, and that becomes a big-time issue for Seattle. So I would look at that very closely moving forward to find the Seahawks and monitor what he's doing out there.
All right, Andy, before we move on, I just want to talk about Harry's razors for a second. You know, they sent me some. I'm a guy, I have thick facial hair. I have pretty sensitive skin. I really never was able to get a close enough shave. You know, my wife's upset with it. My kids hate hugging or kissing when I have the beard going because it just scratches them up. It's just kind of a mess. I got the Harry's. I'm actually getting a closer shave than I've ever gotten before. And on top of that, they have this moisturizing shave cream. Actually smells good. You know, it doesn't smell like you just bathed in cologne or something like that. I mean, Andy, you're a beard guy. I mean, you must use something like this.
Yeah, because for one, I've had a beard like 7 or 8 years now, and everybody in my family who's 50 years or older, so my grandparents, my aunts, my uncles, my parents, the beard still seems new to them. Like, oh, you have a beard now. They've never adjusted to my beard. And what you have to do when you have a beard, because I've always thought, oh, you have a beard, you don't have to worry about shaving. It's the exact opposite of that.
Yeah.
Because you have to trim the beard and be precise with the beard and shape
it. You got to maintain
it. So the razor becomes even more important. I didn't know that before I committed to it, but I have means for taking care of that now.
Well, there you go. Well, listen, the Harry's Starter Set, it's called the Truman. It's a great option for new customers and an amazing deal. For just $15, you get a razor handle, moisturizing shave cream, and three of Harry's five-blade German-engineered razors. Plus, there's a special offer for fans of the show. Harry's will give you $5 off your first purchase with the promo code THINGS. That's THINGS. Go to harrys.com right now and look for the Truman Set. That's HARRYS.com. Enter code THINGS at checkout to get $5 off and help support the show. Stop compromising. Give Harry's a try today. All right, now let's get back to number five. This is the Did You Notice section of the show, where we're going to talk about a couple of things that maybe got by you, even if you watched all, oh, I don't know, what do we have today? Two Monday Nighters.
Sunday you get
13 games. 13 games.
13 games, yeah.
There you go. So even if you watched all 13 games today, you might have missed some of this stuff. Now, I think everyone saw Jack Del Rio calls for the two-point conversion at the end of the Saints and Raiders game. Raiders won that one on the two-pointer. And, you know, that was fantastic. And if I were Bill Raftery, I would say onions, but I am not. So I will not try and do that impression. But what was awesome about it was, so ESPN, you know, a little bit after the game, based on ESPN's win probability model, this is what they tweeted. Based on ESPN's win probability model, Raiders had a 51% chance to win if they kicked PAT and 44% chance if they went for two. Del Rio tweets back, good thing ESPN isn't coaching the Raiders, which, you know, there are many coaches on Twitter, I feel like, and certainly the ones that aren't saying anything too interesting, but that was a mean tweet right there.
Well, he had a point to make, because what, and I get the win model things. I kind of like those types of stats to make for interesting things along the bottom line. They give you some baseline for odds of how unlikely is this and all that, but they have nothing to do with coaching decisions. More often than not, they have nothing to do with coaching decisions. And what you can't account for in those kind of stats and two-point conversion percentage and win model percent, all that stuff, is that it's not the same from game to game. Del Rio very well could have seen something on film from New Orleans and said, hey, we've got a two-point play that's going to work extremely well against these guys. And that's why he runs it. So if maybe he goes against Denver next week, and Denver stopped a two-point play from New England in the AFC Championship to seal that game, and they go against Denver, and he thinks, oh, they got some good man coverage corners. They do a good job with man beaters and defense when most teams don't. We're not going to run our two-point play against these guys. So we don't know that kind of thing. That's a decision that's made on the sideline within the flow of the game. And my guess, it's week one as well. My guess is Del Rio had a play they really liked in their two-point arsenal.
Yeah, and not to mention, I mean, Delvin Bro is out of the game at that point, and the Saints are already thin in the secondary. And, I mean, come on, you got Crabtree, you got Amari Cooper. It's kind of a candy from a baby type of situation, if you will, down there on when you put the ball on the two-yard line. So, great call by Del Rio.
Would you have done it, Gary? Would you have done it?
In that situation, absolutely.
I don't know if I would have. It's a good call. And you mentioned if Delvin Bro's out, I think a lot of coaches there then would be tempted, unless they have a play they really like, which, again, I think Bill Musgrave, their coordinator in Oakland, and Del Rio probably did. I think there are some coaches that would be tempted to say, hey, they're very thin in the secondary. We can get them in overtime if we extend this game.
Yeah, but then you have to worry about stopping Drew Brees if you lose the coin toss, and that is something they certainly had some problems with. No, I had no problem with it. I would say if you have the play, it's the right thing to do. And that was, a couple years ago with, Belichick went for the fourth down. It was like a fourth and two in their own territory against the Colts on a Sunday night, and everyone was like, oh, well, win percentage. It's like they just sort of ran out of play where, Kevin Faulk ran a little hook, and it was pretty you know, pretty expected. So, you know, yeah. I had more of a problem with that call. And obviously hindsight, and one worked, one didn't. So I'm not going to sit here and second guess Bill Belichick, even though I've already tried to predict what he was thinking already earlier in the show.
Tried to lose the game. You open the show by predicting
not
that.
It's not Greg Popovich isn't trying to lose the game when he rests all of his guys. He's just taking the long view of the season and saying, I'd rather optimize my team for later in the season when we have more winnable games, you know, the postseason and stuff. Okay, I won't bring that up again.
But if Popovich were to do what you're, or Belichick Popovich comparison, that'd be the equivalent of Popovich resting his guys for five games, because that's what one NFL game equals to an NBA game based on the number of contests in the schedule.
But if you're saying, if you're going in there thinking, well, we have like a 10% chance of winning this game.
They're not thinking that. They're thinking we've won four Super Bowls. They're thinking last time we were in this building, we won a Super Bowl. This team's never seen us. This team sees us once every 4 years. We've had all offseason to get ready for this team. We're the best coached team in the NFL, which they looked like that night, Sunday night. That's what they're thinking. Are you out of your mind?
No. I think they're thinking, where's Tom Brady?
No, come on.
Wish Tom Brady were here.
Next week, we're going to be talking about how the Boston fans are wondering if Garoppolo should replace Tom Brady. People are probably wanting us to talk about that now.
We won't talk about that yet. Maybe next week's show. But let's move on to topic number six. This is another, did you notice? Dez Bryant, poor Dez Bryant, loses a touchdown on a challenge. I don't know, every time they send something to the replay command center in New York, Dez Bryant must get like a chill through his spine. This one was actually, he didn't catch this ball. It was a bad
call. I don't know why this one's on the outline.
Well, they reverse it because I wanted to ask one question. And I've never discussed with you what you thought of that old Dez Bryant play or what you think of the catch rule in general.
I am fine with the catch rule. I thought the Dez Bryant play against Tremont Williams in the divisional round a few years ago, I thought the NFL got that right. I thought it was an incomplete pass.
Okay. Fair enough.
So here's how I got to that, because I had this argument at big time with Adam Dorson, the magazine editor, because he edited my writing to say, like, well, but Bryant really caught it, but he didn't, kind of thing. And I said, no, he didn't catch it. You have to evaluate if Tremont Williams had not been there at all, if Dez Bryant were by himself, do you think Dez Bryant would have gone to the ground and touched the ball with the ground? Whether he touched it right away or in a second and a half later, he would not have gone to the ground. The defender caused him to go to the ground where the ball touched the ground.
I don't know, Andy. I think you're going off the deep end this week.
Oh, yeah. Well, the NFL agreed, by the way. What's wrong with the rule saying, hey, if you catch the ball, you can't touch the ground with it? Isn't that kind of what the whole essence of catching a ball is?
Well, it's not if you catch the ball and then 2 feet hit the ground or you know, in Dez's case, 3 feet or whatever it was. It's the whole going to the ground thing is what bothers me and what bothers most people. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be okay with this, but in theory, I'd be okay with just saying, like, you know what, refs, pure judgment call, catch or no catch.
Yeah.
They get paid enough to make those sort of decisions. So, of course, it would be an absolute disaster, and it would never work in practice. But I'd like to see it for a season, see how much better it goes.
This one we agree, though. This isn't a discussion topic.
This was no good. I just wanted to talk some catch, no catch with you. Sorry.
Hey,
Andy.
Did you notice against Dez Bryant, because we talked in the offseason about, hey, how will the Giants use their corners? They wanted Eli Apple to be the slot originally, and they were hoping to train him for that. That's a very tall order, as we talked about right after the draft, and it looks like it's a little too tall for Apple to do that now, so Rodgers Cromartie is a slot guy. And I thought he played okay in that role. Without seeing the All-22 yet, it looked to me like Rodgers, nobody got exposed in that Giants secondary at all today.
I mean, you wonder what they were facing with Prescott out there. I mean, it wasn't an explosive passing game coming at him, but so far so good.
Yep.
All right, this is topic number seven, but we have moved on to the next portion of the show. This is the deep dive portion. This is where Andy gets to sort of show off his football knowledge and tell us some things that, you know, the average fan sometimes overlooks and sort of tells us how things work. Now, topic number seven, I'm actually going to give you a chance to brag. I've given you a couple chances to brag about this over the last couple months, and you've been very humble, and it's very noble of you, Andy, but You said Carson Wentz, most pro-ready quarterback to come into the league since Andrew Luck, and everyone laughed and pointed and said, Andy, he's an FCS guy, he's North Dakota State, there's no way, how could you even write that? And here we are, week one, Carson Wentz starts, wins, well, the Eagles won. Played pretty well. I mean, you know, it was the Browns, so you take it with a grain of salt, and the Browns are certainly going through their own transition. But what did you see from Carson Wentz? And I don't know, why, I guess rehash one more time for us. Why was this so expected?
Well, what makes a guy pro-ready, it doesn't matter who he played in college so much. Teams really don't look at that nearly as much as you would guess.
Mm-hmm.
What teams look at are physical traits, which Carson Wentz has all of those. He runs well. He throws well. I think I wrote when I went and watched a film with him and studied him extensively, he almost lulls you to sleep when you watch him because he's kind of boring. He does so many things just efficiently and effectively. He's like the Tim Duncan of quarterbacking. That's what he was in college.
a lot of Spurs references in today's show.
Yeah, there are a lot, of, especially for this being September, not October.
I know.
But that's so the physical skill set's there. But then in college, what Wentz did, so understand, like, let's look at Goff, who isn't playing yet. Goff ran a spread college-type offense. They got to the line. They ran the play. He didn't even call the protections. A lot of the times, he maybe would tweak a protection if there was a blitz, but it was pretty much play call, play run, play call, play run, go, go, go. Wentz got to the line of scrimmage and surveyed the defense and then mm-hmm. set the protection accordingly. So he's read defenses, not just safeties and corners, but linebackers and D linemen. And then he would also call the run plays out of that. So yeah. Not only is he reading D linemen, but he's reading the nuances of their position. Is this guy shaded to the A gap? Is he shaded right over the guard? Where exactly is each defensive lineman lining up? Where are the linebackers? He had to dissect defenses at the finest level. So that was just in the protections. He had full audible powers. It was in the running game and protections. He had full audible powers in mm-hmm. the passing game. Route adjustments, hot adjustments. His reads were full field progression reads, meaning that instead of so just regular progression reads, they always would start in the same spot. A progression read is A to B to C to D. If you get into a full field progression read element, you read the defense and then you base where the progressions begin off of that. So you might start at C and go C to D to B to A or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a higher level of quarterbacking. It's all NFL type stuff. So Wentz had a very small learning curve. The only thing he had to adjust to was the speed of the game, which most guys adjust to that depending on their position, but most guys adjust to that a lot quicker than people realize. So I wasn't surprised he got the starting job ultimately. And even though he only played in, what, like a half a preseason game, they gave him the starting job, which tells you they must have been pretty comfortable with what he was the second they got him in their classroom in Philadelphia.
Yeah. You tell him, Andy. You've been telling him about Carson Wentz. I'm very happy that played out the way it did. Topping number 8, we have one more deep dive here. Vikings win an unusual game in Tennessee, but this was obviously Teddy Bridgewater was out. Sam Bradford was on the roster, but you know, a couple days after getting traded, not ready for it. So you had Sean Hill, you had Adrian Peterson doing nothing. What did you see from this Vikings offense? Because really their offense was, I don't know, scooping up fumbles and getting interceptions and running them back 2 defensive touchdowns.
Well, Peterson didn't have his best game. I think he at times left a few yards on the field, but look, we're critiquing, right? We're nitpicking here. Adrian Peterson sees more loaded boxes than anyone in the NFL, and Minnesota does not have a lot of deceptive elements to their running game. They don't have that's just not the way they play. Now, they have a better offensive line or they're better in spots this year than they were last season, so maybe they will expand some of their concepts. But they're a pretty straightforward bread-and-butter rushing attack. They're very execution-oriented. If you load the box against them, they'll beat you, or the defense will beat you. So that's why they made the first-round draft choice trade for Sam Bradford, because teams will be comfortable loading the box against Sean Hill, who played pretty well overall today. But he's not the answer, because he's going to see – he's still not enough to encourage teams to not load the box against him.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's they've got some work to do in Minnesota. But look, it kind of goes back to that Seahawks thing. You played poorly. Your best player did nothing. Your quarterback was your backup. And you still won the game.
I was going to say.
Winning ugly is, winning ugly is a good thing in pro football.
Yep, absolutely. All right, Andy, 1 second. Start gathering your thoughts for the rapid fire section coming up. But first, I want to talk about my bookie. Football season is here. We're all unbelievably excited. And you know how you make it better? Get in the action and play like the pros at mybookie.net. It's the most exciting online experience for sports fans. MyBookie features real Vegas odds and incredible player props on every football game. Game already kicked off? That's all right. MyBookie has live in-game odds updated in real time. It's never too late to make a play, and it's optimized for smartphone users for nonstop action on the go. Go online, type MyBookie in your browser, and sign up today. Use promo code 10THINGS, that's 10THINGS, to be entered into their $1 million prize pool, or call 844-722-2387. Join the thousands of online players already playing. Only the biggest, only the best, only at MyBookie. Sign up today. All right, we've reached topic 9. This is the rapid fire section, the other things we think about week 1. And Andy, if you don't mind, I'm going to start off. I thought Matthew Stafford was absolutely fantastic, especially late in this game. And, well, I'm glad my kids weren't watching this game with me because they sort of zoomed in on Stafford a couple times during that last drive when he was taking him back against the Colts. And so Marvin Jones catches the ball on the sideline. They have one timeout left. There's like, 20 seconds. Jones catches the ball on the sideline, and he just sort of tiptoes the sideline for a little bit, and then as he's getting tackled, sort of dives back inbounds, and there's about 14 seconds left, but they have to burn their last time out, and, Stafford said some things that, I'm glad my kids can't read lips.
Yeah, please don't burn the timeout again.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
He's very politely. But, yeah, I thought Stafford was great. Good for him. Lions maybe offer some good things this year.
Yeah, my rapid fire thing. I don't want to be negative. But injuries are a part of the game, and I think they need to be analyzed when a guy goes down. And one of the guys who went down today, we'll get to a few others. One of them was Keenan Allen in San Diego.
Yeah.
ACL. We'll find out the extent of the ACL later in the week. Anytime you hear those three letters, though, it's not reason for optimism.
Yep.
That's a big one for the Chargers because, for one, they're very weak at wide receiver outside of Allen. For two, he fit a specific role for them. They do a lot of in-breaking routes, so slant patterns, post patterns. Their offense is built around that, and they run routes based off of those other routes to balance the field. That's just the nature of their passing game. All teams do that, but they're very big on those. And Allen's excellent in that capacity, and now they have nobody to run those. So,
yeah.
And Stevie Williams is out as well. So they've lost
Stevie Johnson.
Yes, well, Steve Williams, their number five corner from last year, is also gone. And he maybe would have been their wide receiver. He could have played wide receiver at this point for these guys. They've got that's a big issue they have there in San Diego, same one they had last year.
Seriously, Chargers just can't catch a break. All right, my next thing, Marcus Hunt is like my favorite guy who really doesn't play that much in the NFL. Blocked another kick. He's 6'8". He's my favorite. He's from SMU. And I don't know. I just really like guys from Estonia who play in the NFL. But he blocked that chip shot field goal for Nick Folk, and that ended up being the turning point. So good for you, Hunt. I'm rooting for you. Go Estonia? I don't know how to wrap that up. I'll throw it back to you, Andy.
Another injury today, Brian Cushing, MCL. Not as bad. Probably won't be. Let's hope it's not life, not life ending, but season ending, shelving for him. But that will hurt Houston's dime defense. They're a very good dime defensive team. They need one linebacker on the field in dime. Cushing was that guy for them a year ago. So now what happens with him gone for a little bit?
Yeah. I'm going to go to Houston, where my playoff-bound Chicago Bears looked absolutely terrible. It was really not a very good game. I didn't think Brock Osweiler would look very good. He was erratic. He probably should have thrown. He could have thrown up to like 6 interceptions in that game. He also could have thrown up to 6 touchdowns in that game. Everyone was dropping everything in that game. But Will Fuller, I thought, looked really good. So good for him. He had that one drop, and then he came back. He was fantastic on that little screen that he dug out and then picked it up, ran for the touchdown. So Nah, nice win for the Texans, but Bears really letting me down, making me look even more foolish than I usually do.
And I'll finish on an injury guy. Again, we mentioned Delvin Bro earlier, fibula. He's going to be out a while. Something a coach told me a few years ago is an interesting point. His defense had been gashed the previous season, and he said, I'm not making excuses, but we had five injuries at the same position. And when you have a lot of injuries gathered at one position, that's as bad as it gets, because now you've got a glaring weakness, and all it takes in the NFL is one glaring weakness and you're exposed. The Saints now at the cornerback have P.J. Williams, a third-round pick who didn't play last year, didn't play meaningful big-time snaps. They have undrafted rookies Ken Crawley and Devontae Harris, and they have Sterling Moore, who I believe has now played for all 32 teams in his career, a journeyman. it's slim pickings at best, which means, man, coverage becomes an issue. Bro is probably going to travel with all number one receivers. Man, coverage is an issue. What you do with your safeties now becomes an issue. Dennis Allen, their D coordinator, wants to be a blitzing coach. You can't blitz if you don't have corners who can cover.
You know, I'm just going to add one more thing at the end here. I know we said we were done, but Larry Fitzgerald, it's a shame that he got overshadowed in that game, because, I mean, look, 100th touchdown pass, and he was incredible. He was making contested catches. He was breaking tackles. He was a total highlight reel, even if the numbers weren't as gaudy as you might see at times from him. But the thing I always love about Fitz is I'm not going to have to tell my grandkids about him, because I'm pretty sure he's just going to still be playing in 40 years.
Yep. He is a phenomenal football player, because he's also very good in their running game as a blocker too.
Yep. All right, Andy. This is the part of the show that you don't really care for, but I'm going to make you do it. Thing number 10, weekly awards. This is just like Peter King does in his column. We're going to hand out the awards of the week. I don't know about you, I took calligraphy all offseason. I'm going to make some certificates and send them out to the players as the MMQB podcast 10 things greatest honor you can possibly achieve. But we will start with offensive player of the week. Andy, I don't know if you want to kick off or should I? How should we do this?
You're going to want to kick off, because mine's going to throw the whole thing off of kilter anyway. It's going to be very difficult to get me to take this as seriously as you want over the course of the season. You're right.
You're going to protest right here. I'm going to give it to – I'm even going to dig in more under your skin, and I'm going to give it to Alex Smith. Because I know we had this argument. I know Alex Smith is a flawed quarterback, and you know, we can have that conversation again maybe another time, but not now. But once again, he brings him back in the fourth quarter. You know, I think the dual threat in him is always something that sort of gets overlooked a little bit when you're talking about his skill set. But you know, Alex Smith, a game that looked like it was totally going to get away from the Chiefs, he brings them storming back. They score, what do they have, 23 unanswered to come back and beat the Chargers. 2-yard touchdown run to win in overtime. He is my offensive player of the week. Who do you got?
When Alex Smith runs, by the way, he is at his best. I believe last season in their 10 wins to end the year, his running aggressiveness, so like his yards and his number of attempts, basically doubled versus those first 6 weeks. He is a much better quarterback when he's running. So I hear what you're saying there.
On behalf of Alex Smith, I will accept that as a compliment.
Yeah, that's an absolutely compliment. He's a very good running quarterback. I will give my – the reason I don't like these kind of awards is because I haven't seen all the games yet, and so I can't compare one guy's performance to it. I didn't watch Alex Smith today. I can't watch 16 games in one day or 13 games in a day. So if we did this on Friday, I'd be all about it. But I'm only going to go off of the games I saw every snap on. I saw the Vikings-Titans this morning. I'm going Tajay Sharpe in a losing effort for the Tennessee Titans. Wide receiver, 7 catches, 76 yards. I'd heard a lot about him. He's a fifth-round rookie. Mm-hmm. Never seen him before. I can understand why. He won the starting job pretty early, especially for being a fifth-round rookie. And I can understand exactly why now. He's a guy who just understands and knows how to play the position. Finishes routes very well. There's a precision to his game. Attacks the ball. I'm very, very eager to see what becomes of him in that offense.
You know what, Andy? I'm okay with that.
Good. Good. We're going to be okay on this.
Big day for UMass wide receivers, I guess. Tajay Sharp, Victor Cruz comes back, catches a touchdown. That was a good times for the Minutemen. Congratulations to all you UMass guys out there. Defensive player of the week, I'm going to give it to Sue because he just kind of wrecked that game quite a bit in Seattle. And like I said earlier in the show, when Sue joined the Dolphins last year, you thought they were going to have a top-notch defensive line. It just never quite worked out. Maybe they have something good cooking under Vance Joseph, losing effort, but I thought he was really good today, and this was kind of what the Dolphins were supposed to be.
I'm going to go Sue's former teammate, Olivier Vernon, in New York. Wasn't a big pass rush influence in this game, particularly against Dallas, but was, and this is what he did so well in Miami as well, absolutely dominant as a point of attack or play side run defender. Gets under pads, very difficult to block. Tight ends can't block him. Has an excellent redirect move back to the inside when he's setting the edge. Mm-hmm. He's as good a play side run defending defensive lineman as there is in the NFL, and I thought that was, you could argue that was the difference in the game against Dallas, in fact.
Yeah. Special teams player of the week, I'm going Roberto Aguayo. Stepping up, drilling his first field goal attempt of his career after that whole preseason of, does he have the yips? Is he psychologically going to crumble and sort of go out there for his first attempt and curl up in a fetal position and weep? But he goes out there, drills it. His kickoffs were good for the most part. That was an unfair criticism of him coming into the league. But, he was good. Good for him. And I like the guy. So, Andy, who
okay,
you got?
This has to be
your least favorite moment of the show right here.
Well, we're ending on a special team. Look, I don't watch special teams on film. It's just not enough time in the week, so I don't know what I'm talking about. I fully admit that. In fact, one time I was at the Senior Bowl and someone said, hey, let me introduce you to our special teams coach. They brought me over, sat me at his table, and left me there, and I had to eat lunch with the guy, and I didn't know what to say. My opening line was, I'm sorry, I don't watch a lot of special teams. Do you have an argument for it that could convince me to start watching it? And I was trying to be polite. And anyway, it was a nightmare. I've never wanted to leave a meeting with a coach before. He's a nice guy, too. Special teams, I'll give it to the Broncos field goal defense unit because I thought something on that Graham Gano, and this is from Thursday night, of course, but I thought, and no one talked about this, I thought on that Graham Gano missed field goal from 50 yards that there was some pressure involved and that everything on Carolina's end got rushed a little bit because Denver's front, what is it, front 11 on a field goal? I don't even know what they call it in special teams. But it looked like Denver generated some pressure there on that field goal and rushed the timing. So Denver's every field goal unit guy, all 11 of them.
I love it. I love the special teams insights that you are providing this week. Coach of the week is the last one. I think it's a no-brainer. It's got to go to Del Rio for that call at the end. And again, we can talk about, do you have the play or, what do the percentages say? A lot of guys just wouldn't do it because you look really dumb if it doesn't work. So he took the risk. It worked. And good for them. Great win for the Raiders and certainly big things expected in Oakland this year.
I was going to go Bill Belichick because he did it on the road against a team that went to the championship in the NFC last year, a very well-coached Cardinals team. They had basically all backups in along their offensive line at quarterback and then at tight end. So I was going to say Belichick before the show, and then I found out early in the show he wasn't even trying to win this game, and they still won. So I'm absolutely going with Bill Belichick for winning a game that apparently, according to my co-host Gary Grambling, the Patriots did not really try to win at all.
You learn something at the top of the show. You got to take the long view sometimes, Andy. And then sometimes you just win anyway because you're the Patriots and you can't help but just win games. All right, Andy, that is a show. We're done. Thank you so much for sticking around. Andy, thank you so much for sticking around. But all of you who listen out there, thanks for sticking with us. Again, we are going to be here. We'll be up bright and early Monday mornings in your podcast feed. Thank you so much to Jeff Irwin, our researcher, and thank you so much to Digital Media, our new production group. They are making us sound really, really good. I was Gary Grambling. He was Andy Benoit. This is the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.